This podcast is brought to you by Civic Tech Innovation Network in partnership with Voice of Vids.
Welcome, everybody, to the third season of the Civic Tech in Africa podcast. We have been on a four-month-long break, and we are finally back. So happy that you've joined us again for another installment of this podcast. So the beginning of our previous season coincided with the launch of the Civic Tech Innovation Forum. We featured a lot of speakers and exhibitionists who were there, and our theme was DIY Africa. We looked at innovators and civic actors and activists who are doing it themselves, right? And in talking to these innovators, a central theme stood out for me, and the theme was around simplicity. Right. The point that most of the innovators were driving home was that it was important to use technology that users were already familiar with in order to have a level of impact that was meaningful. This is an important factor when you consider who the target audience of these specific tech tools are. Some of these users have very little access to digital tools, and some have the most basic tech tools at their disposal. So complex tools may be quite a lot to deal with and may repel potential users. Sometime this year, I came across a well-written short article by Al Keggs, who is my guest today, that was aligning what he calls barriers to citizen engagement. In the article, he's talking about three key points that civic tech innovators need to think about when developing their groundbreaking tools. He notes that innovators have been creating mobile apps to promote good governance and citizen participation for a while now, but those apps largely go unused. And here's some good reasons we need to listen to and hear about today. So in this episode, we're going to have a chat with Al Keggs about some of these reasons and perhaps find a roadmap towards creating impactful DIY civic tech tools. So like I said before, Al Keggs is my guest today. Al Keggs is a marketing and communications expert, serial entrepreneur, and a champion of government openness through data. Al is the founder of the Open Institute, an African organization that works with governments and civil society organizations to promote open government and citizen engagement. Welcome, Al. How are you doing?
I am doing extremely well. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me. So like I said, I want to talk about this article because I think it spoke to some of the themes that we kind of went through last season in the podcast. I think one of the central themes for me was around simplicity. Am I right in thinking that a key element to impactful citizen engagement is simplicity?
So I hesitate to say that. That simplicity is a goal.
Yeah.
Because sometimes simplicity isn't possible in tech.
Right.
But more than simplicity, I think is the human awareness.
Right.
So you build an article, you build an app, however simple it is. If I don't have awareness, I can't use it. Mm. Think about the first time you had to use a mobile phone, or you had to show your mom how to use a mobile phone, or somebody who's older. And you realize that even the feature phones, as simple as they are, it may have taken an older person a few minutes to sort of understand their way around texting, for example. Understanding the way around on a feature phone, you need to, if you want to get to L, you have to press 5-4 times, that sort of thing. And that dexterity gets better over time. So I don't know that the goal is simplicity. I think that the goal is getting people to understand. And in my article, what I was trying to say is that a lot of us are building apps, we're building tools, and we are taking the approach that if we build it, they will come, or they will figure out how to use it. So you build a really, I've seen very useful tools that are built by many civic tech guys who go and say, well, we can build a tool that enables us to complain to government that there's a pothole in my neighborhood. On the face of it, and a lot of them are very simple. You literally say complain. It gives you a box. That box you type in, I have a pothole in my place. It tells you upload a photo of the pothole. You upload the photo and you hit send. That's really simple. How much simpler can that get?
Yeah, yeah.
But even then, those tools are not used. So you ask yourself, why are they not used? And the reason that they're not used is a factor of population. Kenya has a population of 50 million people.
Right.
About 30% live in urban areas. Majority of the people in Kenya live in rural areas. I think that is true for many African countries. Mm. Now, when you have majority of the people living in rural areas, a barrier for them to use that tool is connectivity. Mm. Another barrier in most parts of Africa is that people do not have the literacy and what we call functional literacy. Is that, yes. Yeah, I know how to read and write. But functional literacy goes beyond reading and writing and counting. Functional literacy is this. I know how to read and write. I know what money is and how to manage money, how to save, how to invest it. I know how to, which government office does what and how I can get help. Or at least I know who to ask that question.
Right.
I know in general how government works generally and what the difference is between my legislative representative and the government official responsible for administration.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing, those nuance, that basic information. Number three, I have some digital awareness. I know how to use a phone. I know how to use an app and that sort of thing. Number four is that I have life skills. Mm. I know how to communicate. I can go into a government office and say, hi, my name is Al and I need help.
Right.
Because don't forget that even just the ability to go to an office, to a government office or to any office, to walk into a bank requires a certain level of confidence.
Yes.
Now, the truth of the matter is that in Africa and in many parts of the world, but certainly in Africa, there are many people who dare not walk into a bank. They have never walked into a bank. They don't know what the procedure is to walk into a bank. And there is usually a security person at the entrance of the bank, and that is enough of a barrier to entry.
Right.
There's enough people in Africa who have not walked into a supermarket, who would not know how a supermarket works. There are people on this continent, and the thing that we in the tech world sort of fail to pay attention to is that these people are very many. And that they are, in fact, quite possibly the majority of us.
And you also spoke about, you touch on the issue of confidence as well. In the article, as a second factor that may be, because you just stated that a factor, the first factor is functional literacy, right? But that is an important thing. So you also state that exposure is an important factor to look at. So you shared some anecdotes there about your experience in rural Kenya of people who don't have water in their household and so don't know that this is a thing, a right that they deserve, right? Yeah. It's a thing that they deserve to have in their house as a right. And so, I mean, just tell me some of the anecdotes that you encountered during your experience in rural Kenya.
So I still live in rural Kenya. I live in a small town that is called Malindi, north of Mombasa.
Yeah.
And 1 hour from my house are villages that I spend a little bit of my time in. And I have met people there. I met Kazungu, who is 50 years old, who has never been to Malindi town, 1 hour away from his house. Mm. And I want you to know that Malindi town is not a big town. It's a small town. And it would be the main administrative town for Kazungu. But he has never been to Malindi town, because the only reason that he can think of to go to Malindi town is if he was going for a job or if he was going for a hospital or something like that. Mm. And he hasn't any of those. He stays in the farm and he's literally just never been. He's married. He's married to a wife who is about 35 years old, never been to Malindi town, never needed to. Their first child is, I think, 24 or thereabouts, never been to town. Never, they have, in where they have seen water running is at the local borehole. They've never had water running. They've never had a shower. So you tell this person that they have a right to a shower.
So that might confuse them. Like, I mean, I've been fine this whole time.
I've just never seen it. So, I've always been clean. I'm not dirty.
Yeah.
I wash myself with a basin. I have never seen a shower. I don't know how it operates. I have not been to a supermarket. I have not been to a busy town or a busy city.
Right.
I have not. So the amenities that those of us who are in the city, those of us who have a Western civilization, who have access to podcasts, who have the ability to, you know, we've seen TV, and therefore at the very least we've seen elevators, and we've seen all of these things. We have not, you know, even if you've never flown, you've seen on TV how an airplane is inside.
Right.
You know, those sort of things. If I'm in this rural place and I've never seen it, I have no concept of what I might demand for myself.
Right. You say in the article,
this actually goes to the heart of being able to engage with government. For me to engage with government, I need three things. I need knowledge.
Yeah.
That what government does and who to talk to.
Yeah.
Number two, I need confidence. And confidence comes out of knowledge and exposure.
Yeah.
And exposure is that I have gone to other places and I've seen what they are doing, and I've come back to my government representative and I said, why don't we have the same thing those guys have? Isn't it?
Yeah.
And then number three is confidence. And confidence comes from the fact that I know, the fact that I have the etiquette, I have, and I use etiquette here not as manners, but as the ability to engage.
Right.
And so without those three things that give me confidence, then I can't demand anything.
And you say this very nicely. I mean, so there's something you say here about... So just as a way forward, you say, you know, so, I mean, you said here, I just want to, and you said very nicely here that the net effect of functional literacy and exposure is a higher self-esteem, which results in the confidence of the citizens in approaching the government with their proposals for development, laying down their priorities. And that sums up those three key factors we're talking about, right, as important things. But then you go on to talk about what we do need to do going forward. And this is something you say, we need to invest in soft issues, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about investing our energy in civic literacy and participation. I just want you to speak a little bit further, a little bit about this, about how far do we go in investing in soft issues? How many, what are some of these things that we need to invest in?
So when private sector companies build things, so when you think about your local mobile company, MTN or Safaricom or any of these companies, when they build things, what they do is that they spend an enormous amount of money marketing those things to us. They tell us that this is how this will change our lives, and they make sure that we are adequately excited to want to even test the usage of this thing. And some of the things they tell us to do are not simple, especially if you think about the question, the USSD, and how, even for me, who has been in tech for a long time, USSD is somehow has never been completely intuitive. It's something that I do very slowly.
Right.
But they make us excited enough about whatever service it is that they're telling us to use, that we then use it, and we then ask somebody to come and help us to use it. But when we think about people in the nonprofit sector, we don't do any marketing because of the fact that we feel that the marketing is not a thing for us.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is that we do have to do marketing, and we do have to do serious awareness, and we do have to put the budgets behind it. Most telcos will put 30% of their budgets on marketing.
Right.
Most nonprofits put less than 5% of their budgets on marketing. And when they do marketing, they do a brochure or a booklet that is written in this language that we speak. And you realize this language that we speak is not necessarily English or you know, it tends to be very dense language. All right.
Yeah.
If you look, I invite anyone in the civic tech world to spend some time just looking at how the telcos communicate a new product. Just look at how they sell it. Look at how they communicate it, and then see how they break down something that is extremely complex, and how much of an impact it has in getting people to use it. That's the same thing we have to do.
Right.
We have to engage marketing agencies who know how to communicate to the public.
Yes.
We have to pay them well. And then we have to make sure that we put budgets for marketing behind it. And here I'm talking to both us in the civic tech, but I'm also talking to our donors, the ones who support us. Mm-hmm. Because the ones who support us, they're supporting us so that something happens, something changes.
And what do you think the role of community-based organizations is in educating people about these things? I hear the marketing aspects of it. Do community-based organizations have a part to play in educating people about tech tools?
One of the analogies that I have been asking people lately, which is a little controversial, is this. If you had body odor, and I needed to tell you that you have body odor, or if somebody needed to tell you, Nati, you have body odor, who would be the person who would be likely to tell you?
Perhaps your family? No?
Yeah. Family, it would be a very, very close friend of yours.
Yeah.
You would generally not listen to a stranger who tells you that, because you might think that they're being abusive or derogatory or something.
Yeah.
Who's close to you is a person who can tell you something that is intimate that they need you to change about yourself. Am I right?
Yeah.
In the same, it is not feasible for a Ford Foundation to come from the United States, or an Open Institute to come from Nairobi, to come all the way to South Africa into Sesipi and tell somebody that they have body odor.
Right.
That they need to change their ways, that they need to change their behaviors, that they need to use this technology, that they need to become more proactive in engaging with government, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because of the fact that we haven't built that level of trust, and that level of trust is built over years.
Mm-hmm.
But a community-based organization will be staffed, will be owned, will be organized by the people from that community, which means they have the trust, they have the people know them, they've been interacting with them, they know that, and they even know the nuances of the community.
So, I mean, I think I would be right to say that it's not enough to say I have an app, right, and put it out there as a developer of an app. It's important to do the groundwork and go to the ground, you know, to community-based organizations and engage with those people that your target audience, I suppose. It's a lot more than just putting it out there, right? There's a lot more groundwork. There's a lot more, greeting to be done, like you said. So there's a whole balance between online activity and offline activities that make an app or a tool a successful and impactful app at the end.
You know, there are two things I want to say. One is that one of the other barriers to usage of apps is language. Right. Most of us build our apps in English.
Yes.
In Africa, we don't speak English.
Right.
In fact, even when we speak English, it isn't really English.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's not proper English.
Yeah.
But apps are written in proper English.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing an app in Nigeria and I'm not using the local way that they speak, I'm doing an app in Nairobi and I'm not writing in local, in the way that, even the way in Kenya we say me, I, which is a repetition. We say me, I like you.
Yes.
Which in English we don't.
Yes.
If we don't take those nuances into consideration when we are writing the language of our apps, then you find that there's still a gap, right?
See that now that talks to that, the idea that if you don't understand your target audience in the first place,
yes, but
you can't build for them and expect that the app will do something meaningful in their lives.
Here's what's worse. When we build those, when you do those little videos that explain how to use the apps, we do those videos. again, are we doing this for an American audience or for an? So that's number one that we need to think about. Right. The second thing that I think is really important for us to think about is this. At the time that you're building this app and you're hoping that people get to use it, I've been making I've been advocating among civic tech people that they should leave the cities. They should leave the comforts of the I don't know if it's true in South Africa, but the truth is that in Kenya, majority of the people who build the really cool apps and stuff like that live in Nairobi. And not only do they live in Nairobi, but they live in a specific area of Nairobi. They live in upmarket.
In the city,
The upmarket areas of the city. The safer areas of the city, the places where it's tarmacked everywhere, there are no potholes everywhere. In fact, there are areas of Nairobi where you'd think you live in Europe. That's where majority of developers are. And one of the things that I would be saying is that they need to leave those neighborhoods and they need to go into the rural areas and they need to develop while in the rural areas. I'm saying that they need to leave the comfort of their Kilimanis and their nice neighborhoods, and they go all the way to a rural area, so long as it has a connection. And they should spend 3, 4, 5 months living there and observing how people operate there. Because as they do, it changes you. It helps you to understand how people, what are the barriers to people.
Get out of your comfort zone is what LKX is saying. Get out of your comfort zone. And, you know, go see the reality and understand who you're building for and you know, what language they understand and engage with those civic, those community-based organizations to understand them better. I think that's the message that we've put out here today. In any case, I want to plug quickly the Open Institute and what you're doing there. And tell me a little bit about that and your work thus far.
So the Open Institute is an African organization. And what we do is that we focus on transparency, participation, and accountability as our main issues.
Right.
Our work focuses on two things. On the one hand, we work to promote proactive transparency among governments. So we are encouraging governments to be proactively transparent to citizens. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, we are working with citizens and promoting for them to be active citizens, which means that we are encouraging them as much as possible to spend their energy, their time, and their resources speaking to government and telling them, this is how we want our things done.
Right.
So that they have, an improved sort of lifestyle for everybody.
Right. Okay. So just check out the description below in this episode, rather, and see all the details about. So we're going to put out their website. We're going to put out their social media details on there. You're going to check out the work that they do at the Open Institute. That concludes this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and review the podcast, and please see the episode description for all the places you can follow and engage with the Civic Tech Innovation Network. Until next time, goodbye.
This podcast is brought to you by Civic Tech Innovation Network in partnership with Voice of Vids.